From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1990 at a Boston rock club called The Paradise. This was another packed crowd for a popular pair of performers, Emily Saylors and Amy Ray. You know them as the Indigo Girls, and in attendance that night was a woman whose life was about to be changed. Mary Gaucher was 28 years old that night, and she has one of the most fascinating personal stories I have ever heard. You ready for this? Mary was born in New Orleans, never knew her mom. She was left in an infant's asylum, adopted a year later. At age 15, she ran away from home and then was in and out of rehab, couch surfing with friends, drinking a lot, doing a lot of drugs. Then she went to LSU, became a philosophy major, but dropped out before she could graduate. Mary went to the Cambridge School of Culinary Arts and opened a Cajun restaurant in Boston eventually. She became a good chef, a really good one, ran several restaurants, but she was still drinking. And while her culinary career was on the rise, she had questions about who she really was. Mary recently wrote this, quote, "Lesbian icons. When I was a kid, the mere thought of such a thing was laughable. I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in the 1970s. There were no iconic gay women. Hell, there were no gay women, period." End quote. But then, sitting her car in her early 20s, a song came on the radio. Mary Gaucher was mesmerized. This was that song. Was the Indigo Girls playing Strange Fire. And when it was over, Mary writes that she sat in her car pounding the steering wheel and she cried. She had grown up loving the idea of songwriting, but the music industry didn't have much time for gay women who looked like gay women. And yet here came the Indigo Girls, and that planted a seed in Mary. She was still drinking, though, still cooking. And then in 1990, she got arrested for drunk driving. That served as her first change agent. Mary got sober. She wanted to find out more about this band and these two women who played that amazing song, Strange Fire. So, back to the Paradise. She went there. The audience was mostly women that night. The place was electric. She said it felt like the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And she knew her life was about to change. Now the story is amazing. Mary's put out roughly a dozen albums. 2005, she won the AMA Emerging Artist of the Year Award following the great Mindy Smith. And tonight she performs in Rochester with a new album out. Every song on the new album is co-written with a veteran or a family of veterans. It's an emotional, stirring record, and we can't wait to talk about it. Mary Gaucher, welcome to Connections. How are you?
That's the best introduction I've ever had.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Did that all ring true to you?
Oh, my God. What a story. And it's true.
What's your life?
I can't believe it. You did so good. Thank you for that. It is an unlikely story to get started in this business, which is such a youth business at my age. I really didn't kick off professionally as a songwriter till 40. And, you know, I was just a late bloomers club, and it remains true, and I kind of like it. I'm so glad I didn't peak in high school.
Well, I want to tell you that as I got ready for your appearance, you know, I knew your music. I wanted to learn more about this album, but then I read the piece that you wrote about Emily and Amy, and I grew up loving the Indigo Girls, and you saw them in the rain in 91. I saw them in the rain in 1993 with Rites of Passage in Cleveland, and it's pouring rain, and it's 6,000 people, and it was just really, really remarkable. I played Closer to Fine every summer on a banged-up old guitar, very poorly, I might add. But I thought the way you wrote about them was so inspiring. And I wonder if, go back to that night at the Paradise. You said you went to the bathroom. You almost left the show early because you felt like it was almost emotionally too much to handle. What were you thinking at the time?
I didn't know that there was something going on psychically with me that I couldn't put together. It didn't make sense, but it was visceral in my viscera, way down in my gut. It rocked me in such a way that I was nauseous. I thought I was going to be sick. It was a convergence that was bigger than me, and I didn't understand. But the Band-Aid was taken off of some kind of unhealed wound, and it needed to heal. And what I needed to do was quit telling myself lies that because of this and because of that, I couldn't pursue what was deep in my heart, which was the call to song.
The call to song, but you were a great chef, too. And you don't even do that anymore. So
Yeah. I was able to make a really good living cooking, and I can run a business really well. But my soul is an artist, and my art is a language art. And so while the cooking arts, culinary arts are definitely an art, what my destiny was, what my soul wanted, what I came to Earth to do was to express myself in song. And I didn't think it would be possible because of all the problems I had with addiction, because of how old I was getting, because of my deep-seated insecurity about being a lesbian-looking lesbian in a business where that was just not, it just didn't seem possible. And then here it was in front of me, two great artists who did nothing to hide the fact that of who they were, because there's nothing wrong with who they are, who they were. And the art spoke volumes. It didn't matter anything else. So, it was coming face to face with my future. You know, not that I've had pop hits or enjoyed the success that they've enjoyed, but my trajectory has been perfect for me. And it's they allowed that for so many people. I'm good friends with both of them now, and their manager too, and you know, tens of thousands of people. They opened the door for tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, I just grew up as a guy loving their music, and people would ask who it does the best harmony of all time. I go, maybe Emily and Amy, maybe Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. But Emily and Amy are right there with the best harmonies I've ever heard.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. If you ever heard them sing America a cappella, oh, God.
Well, I have not.
Oh, it's so good. It's so, so good. And the harmonies are dead on. Yeah, because they've been singing together so long, since high school.
And they helped bring you to see yourself in this new way. But it didn't happen overnight. It took you some time to start really writing music. And obviously a big career change kind of happens there. But was there a moment where you're getting back into songwriting where you think, this is it, this is who I am and this is life now, and I'm not going to go back to the kitchen, I'm not going to go back into the restaurant scene?
Well, with most things in life are a process. This was a process. Mm-hmm. I was pushed in this direction, and I'd go to open mics and play my songs, and then I'd become terrified, and I'd try to fall in love with the kitchen again. And I try to will myself to fall in love with the restaurant again.
Because that would have been easier?
Well, yeah, a lot easier, financially stable. It's like when you're in a bad relationship and you know that it's done, but you don't want it to be done. So you go back in, you go, I'm going to be grateful for what I have, and I'm going to appreciate the gifts that the Lord has given me, and I'm gonna try to love this and be present for this. And I'd go back in and I'd try, and it'd last about half a day, and then I'd just be like, I want to go home and work on music. And I wasn't able to be in love with it anymore. And so I guess from that experience at the Paradise, I got sober after that. I needed to stabilize. Getting sober is very, very hard. Stability takes quite a while. But a decade after that, I walked away from all of it and moved to Nashville. And since then, this is what I've done full-time, full-on. It's gone on, 25 years now.
And you live in Nashville, and you've done, sounds to me like everything, Grand Ole Opry, the whole scene. You know, you have broken through on, you know, a singer-songwriting scene, sort of the country music scene. How is the country music scene to gay artists?
Well, there's me.
That's why I'm asking. I'm kind of looking around.
Pause.
That's kind of the point.
Long, hard pause. You know what? They've been really generous with me.
Good.
You know, Blake Shelton recorded my songs. Tim McGraw recorded my songs. I was holding Garth Brooks' hands on stage April 7th for Bobby Bear's birthday. Garth Brooks was there to reinduct him into the Opry. I was able to be a part of that. You know, he grabbed my hand and held it, and I've been allowed in, and I'm grateful. I don't know how to answer that question. All I know is if my presence there is even a little bit like what Emily and Amy did for me, if my presence there is doing that for other people like me who are telling themselves, I can't do this because of this and that, I hope that I can return the favor. You know, that the door is open now. In many, many ways, the door is open. Now just walk on through. Just write the songs and walk on through.
Mary Gauchet is my guest for the hour, performing at the Levin Cup tonight in Henrietta. And the show starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets, $20 if you get them in advance in levincup.com or $25 at the door. Tonight, it's always a great venue and a great scene to hear a show. It's really intimate, but still plenty of space. So 11 Cup, 8 o'clock tonight for Mary's show. And in a moment, we're going to talk about this album and this in many ways, this cause that she is using art in service and telling these stories of veterans. Before we get there, there's another song that predates this by about 13 years, I think, that I saw in an interview you did with Sarah Silverman. Sarah was jokingly, well, not really joking, that Rolling Stone called this the saddest song ever written. Is that true?
Top 10 saddest songs
in the top 10 saddest songs ever written.
Yeah.
Tell us about this song before we hear a little bit of it there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it was a real thrill to be on Sarah's show. We had a ball. She's ridiculously smart. First of all, she has a thing that's her persona, and she plays it well, but behind all that is an incredibly active mind. She's brilliant. She made some jokes about it, but I think the I don't know if it's funny, but the weird thing is they called it in the top 10 saddest country songs of all time.
Well, country is the genre for sad songs. I mean, Malcolm Gladwell just did a whole podcast on it.
Yeah. But it's a folk song, and I'm not 100% sure it's sad. I think it's more real.
I think it is too, because I was surprised to see it on the list.
Yeah, me too.
A short explanation of what it's about before we hear it?
Yeah, I think it's about, it's about mercy, and it's called Mercy Now, and the idea behind it started with my own personal experience with my dad getting dementia, and then it expanded out to bigger and bigger notions of where mercy could fit in my world, and I used... a device that Lucinda Williams had used in one of her songs to pull the camera lens back, start with the very personal, and then move back and back and back. And I can't remember the name of that song, but I'm going to change the locks on this. Change the Locks may be the name of that song, Lucinda song. But Tom Petty actually recorded that Lou song. So I used that device, and I remembered that song, and I just kind of studied the device and backed up the camera lens of the narrator in the song Mercy Now, and it became very big, much bigger than the individual. And so I'd be happy to play it for you.
Yeah, this is Mercy Now.
Thank you. Well, my father sure could use a little mercy now. The fruits of his labor fall and rot slowly on the ground. His work is almost over, won't be long, he won't be around. I love my father. He could use some mercy now. And my brother sure could use a little mercy now. He's a stranger to freedom, shackled to fear and doubt. The pain that he lives in, it's almost more than living will allow. I love my brother. He could use some mercy now. My church and my country, they could use a little mercy now. as they sink into a poison pit. It's gonna take forever to climb out. They carry the weight of the faithful who follow them down. I love my church and country. They could use some mercy now. Every living thing could use a little mercy now. Only the hand of grace can end the race. Towards another mushroom cloud. There's people in power who'll do anything to keep their crown. I love life and life itself. Could use some mercy now. Y'all could use a little mercy now. Oh, I know we don't deserve it, but we need it anyhow. We hang in the balance, dangle between hell and hallowed ground. Every single one of us could use some mercy now. Yes, every single one of us could use some mercy now.
That's beautiful. Mary Gaucher playing Mercy Now live on Connections here. And you play that song and you will, I'm sure you've often seen people with tears streaming down their face. What is that like for you when you see that kind of reaction?
When I first started, I wasn't expecting that. It was kind of like, whoa, it's a sacred moment and I want to honor that. And I didn't really know what to do when people come up after the show and have tears in their eyes and talk to me from their heart. But now, after 20 years, I know that this is likely to happen. And so I'm able to sit with them and just bear witness, and they know that I know. And that's good. That's good. We don't need to be alone with the burdens that we carry. Mm. It's helpful to know that somebody knows.
Margaret Renkel wrote this in the New York Times that surprised me a little bit, I admit. She says that writing with military veterans might not seem like a natural fit for Ms. Gaucher, a lesbian and outspoken liberal who received death threats because of the anti-war sentiment in Mercy Now. When the song was released, Ms. Gaucher had to call the FBI because trolls were sending her pictures of beheadings with captions that read, "Tick-tock, tick-tock." That made me very, very sad to read that in the New York Times about the song that I just heard. But it's real. That's accurate, huh?
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, yeah.
How did that hit you?
Terrifying. Yeah, terrifying.
And if you read Mary on Twitter, you know, you've got some strong opinions about what's happening in the country now.
Yes, I do.
But when you meet Mary in person, as Margaret Renkel wrote, you say, "I love you" a lot.
I do.
You're a very loving person.
I do.
We could probably use a little mercy, but a little more love now, huh?
I think so, yeah. I was with a veteran last night that I wrote with. His name is Josh Gertz, and we were talking before the show. He plays harmonica. He played harmonica with me in the show last night. And Josh said, "You know, these days I feel like just going up to strangers." He can't walk. He's in a chair. But he said, "I feel like going up to strangers and just hugging them." Like, you know, I have that feeling too. People are really in a lot of pain out there. And there's this rage, and we're in this scary time where people are receiving death threats by the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. You know, if you take a stance against military-grade weapons in civilians' hands, that AR-15 that keeps getting used in the mass shootings, if you think people shouldn't be allowed to have one, then there's folks who feel entitled to threaten your life for having that opinion. We live in that kind of time right now. And behind that rage is a lot of hurt, I think. And so, you know, I've watched my friend Sarah Silverman actually go into someone's rage and disarm them with love. She's really good at it. And so I try to remember that, too. That underneath that rage is some hurt. And I try to stay with that because I don't want to return rage with rage. You know, an eye for an eye, we all die. It doesn't work. So I try to stay in the place of, I'm not going to shut up. I have strong opinions, and of course, I think I'm right. But that doesn't mean that I want to go at it with rage and dominance.
Can you find it in your heart to say "I love you" to people who are shouting you down or upset with you for your opinions on AR-15s or aren't comfortable with a gay person on stage? Can you still find it in your heart to say "I love you" to those folks?
Well, it's a process. No, not immediately.
Yeah.
But if I can get into a dialogue and get the person to start to tell me what's driving that, and if we can get vulnerable together, and if I can guide them to their pain and they can show me where it hurts, then I can. Because when somebody's hurting, I have no choice but to experience empathy.
You talk about Sarah doing a really good job of returning love after receiving rage.
Yes.
That's really difficult.
Yes, that's really hard.
It feels increasingly difficult.
It does, and it also feels increasingly necessary. Dr. King learned from Gandhi. We've got teachers that came before us. And of course the great peacemakers will always be killed. You know, it is the tragedy of the human existence that we kill the great peacemakers. That doesn't mean we don't continue to pray for more great peacemakers, that one day we can find peace.
I want to make sure our listeners know exactly what's going on tonight and where you can find more of Mary's work, because it's pronounced Gaucher, but...
I know.
Mary was joking before. So that comes from... That's a very popular name in Louisiana?
It's a very common name in South Louisiana, but in the rest of the country, it's complicated because it's Gauthier. And I guess maybe up here it would be Gaither or maybe even Gautier. Close enough to Canada to have a French pronunciation. The Canadian French is very different than the South Louisiana Cajun French, and that's very different than the classical France French. So TH in South Louisiana often comes out as sh. So Gaucher is how my family pronounces their name.
So Mary Gaucher, and the new CD that we're going to talk about in our next half hour is Rifles and Rosary Beads, written with American veterans and military family members, and the songs are the result of a nonprofit called Songwriting with Soldiers. So we're going to talk about Rifles and Rosary Beads. Mary's going to play another tune for us. I've got a couple of cuts from the album that we can listen to as well. We're going to talk about using art in service, songwriting in service. We're going to talk about the art of authentic songwriting and a lot more. Tonight, Mary Gaucher performs at the Love and Cup at 8 p.m. Tickets, $20 if you get them in advance at loveandcup.com, $25 if you get them at the door tonight. So let's get our only break, and we'll come right back with more Mary Gaucher. But first, let me tell you what's coming up Wednesday on the next Connections. How can we teach writing to diverse students? African-American students are often pressured to code switch in academic settings, but the authors of a new book advocate for what they call code meshing, allowing students to use African-American English. We'll talk to the authors about how to foster inclusivity in the classroom tomorrow. Then in our second hour tomorrow, an update on the Eco District, a local green vision for High Falls and the area surrounding it right here in Rochester. That is Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mary Gaucher in studio with us for the hour, and I'm looking at your resume. You've got around a dozen albums now, and I'm curious how you land on a project like this one. Again, the new CD is called Rifles and Rosary Beads, written with American veterans and military family members. How did this happen?
Well, I've been part of a program called Songwriting with Soldiers. It's a nonprofit organization that was founded by the songwriter Darden Smith. I was asked to do a retreat with veterans and co-write songs with them about 5 years ago. The way it works is there's 4 professional songwriters, 8 to 10 veterans, and we go to a retreat center. We show up on a Friday, and we write songs till Sunday afternoon, and by Sunday afternoon we've got a dozen songs that didn't exist on Friday. And we play the songs at a little concert at the end of the retreat. The songs are composed of the words that the veterans tell us. We listen to their stories. We sit one-on-one into a small little room somewhere on the campus of a retreat center and bear witness and turn the story that we're being told into songs. And the challenge is to bear witness in non-judgment, no matter what is said, to just mirror back what we hear, and not in any way get into a discussion of morality or judgment. And we don't diagnose. We're not therapists. We don't we don't sit in a position of authority. We're just songwriters who want to get a great song, and so we tell their story in the song, and their experience is sometimes deeply emotional. These stories are difficult. Our veterans are struggling. We've been at war 17 years, and civilians are very removed from the experience of military families now. There's a great divide. They feel unseen and unheard. And we have also this sort of picture of a soldier as someone who doesn't talk. Like, soldiers don't talk about what they've been through. But it turns out they do if they're listened to in non-judgment, by a songwriter anyway. We have had soldiers talk and talk and talk, and we're able to transcribe what they say and translate it and put it into a song, kind of, I call it midwifing. We didn't create the baby, but that baby's already in the birth canal, and we just help it bring it into the world, and that baby is what their soul needs to say.
Is there one you want to start with? You want to play a...
Yeah, I will. I wrote this with a young man who served in Desert Storm, and he talked about the experience of Veterans Day, and how he has so many mixed emotions about it. And we got into this is a story song. We got into this story because he told me that on Veterans Day, in the South, there's a well, I guess everybody knows now because of the shooting in Nashville at the Waffle House, but there's a chain of breakfast places called Waffle House. And if you have an active duty military ID, they give you free breakfast at the Waffle House. And Waffle House is a Southern institution. So I said, well, let's just put you at the Waffle House on Veterans Day, and let's make up a song about how you feel sitting there. And so that's what we did. And this is called Bullet Holes in the Sky. The 11th of November in Nashville, Tennessee. Free breakfast at the Waffle House if I show my ID. A parade up on the riverfront, you can hear trumpets play. Hands on hearts, the color guard kicks it off on Veterans Day. and they thank me for my service and wave those little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they'd send us back, but I believe in God and country and in the angels up on high and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. The waitress asked me how I'm doing, but I don't know what to say. I was thinking about the battlefield the night I learned to pray. Marchers make their way down Main Street. The crowd begins to cheer. I feel my chest explode as my eyes fill up with tears. And they thank me for my service and wave those little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they'd send us back, but I believe in God and country and in the angels up on high and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. Well, Jesus said, forgive them, they don't know what they do. He's here with me this morning, and his words still ring true. I hang my head, pray for those we lost and those who remain. As the clouds burst over Nashville, it begins to rain, and they thank me for my service, wave those little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they'd send us back, but I believe in God and country and in the angels up on high and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky.
Mary Gaucher is my guest for the hour, award-winning singer-songwriter in Rochester. Bullet Holes in the Skies is part of the new CD, Rifles and Rosary Beads. And I'm curious to know how the veterans you co-wrote with, when they heard the songs, how did it move them?
It's very moving. It's very moving to hear, oftentimes, your trauma story sung back to you. So many of the veterans tell us that it's the moment where they start to experience hope again. You see, the problem with trauma and the reason we're in a crisis with our veterans, we're losing 22 a day to suicide right now, and that's the VA numbers. The problem with trauma is that it's ineffable. There's no way to tell it. The nature of trauma is there's no words. There's just no words. But music is capable of going to places that words can't reach. And so we find the melody that mirrors the experience they're telling us. And then we use story to get to what happened. Oftentimes, we talk around it. The story I just sang you is a fictionalized account, but it's emotionally true, and everything in it is real. That doesn't mean that it happened, but it's real, and it is an experience that generates empathy. And this is what literature does. This is what paintings do. It's the function of art on the highest level, is to let people know they're not alone in how they feel.
You know, you're writing a book on the art of songwriting, and you tweeted this. You said, a song is true when we believe it.
Yes.
And what you did not say is a song is true if we have experienced exactly what we are writing about.
Exactly. I think that that's journal. Well, there's two things going on. I think that in the beginning, songwriters can sometimes confuse their job with journalism and stick to the facts. And they'll tell me, I teach songwriting a lot, and they'll play something, and I'll say, but I'm not believing it. And they'll say, but that's exactly what happened. And I say, yes, but I'm still not believing it. We're missing something that job of songwriting is not one of just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. It is absolutely important to get us involved emotionally. And so sometimes you have to stray from the facts. Often you have to stray from the facts. Art is a lie that points to a truth. It's a paradox. And the other thing is that there's emotional truth is different than the truth we look for in a court of law. It's finding our way to the feeling of being human.
There is a quote that you're going to have to edit out before the hour began. You said on the subject of songwriting that Bruce Springsteen said.
Oh, yeah. In Bruce Springsteen's one-man play, he makes a comment that I think is just profound, and he tells the audience, I've never been in a factory in my life. From the time he was a very young man, he made his living in the club singing about these things, but he didn't live it. He is a great empath. He's able to get into characters, which is what great writers do. They get into the character and become that character. It's what great actors do. Meryl Streep did not own the Washington Post. But by God, you're believing that she did by the end of that movie. She became Katharine Graham. She is amazing. And that's what great art is. It's becoming the other. So you don't have to have been there. But you have to have the knowledge of what it means to have been there.
Yeah, I think that's important. If Bruce Springsteen got on stage and said, and by the way, I think what he actually said, as you told me, was, I've never been in a blank factory.
That's right. Right. And the emphasis is funny because he'd never wanted to be in a factory.
And he's emphasizing, look, I've sang about these issues for the working class for so long, but don't mistake me for a guy who's had that actual dirt under my fingernails doing what I'm singing about. But if he said that in a way that was almost mocking or, hey, look at the career I've had. But instead, I think what he was explaining, it sounds like, was, I may not have lived those experiences myself, but I care about the people who have, and I've worked hard to understand what it meant to them.
That's exactly right, and he witnessed his father doing it. You know, over and over again in his stories, he tells that on stage, is his father worked in the factory, and he saw the dead-end nature of that job and the soul-killing nature of that job. And yet, now that the factories are closed, without the factory jobs, we're in even worse shape, because there's a hole for the working man. Where do they plug in? And the artists today are going to articulate that. The loss of manufacturing is why we're in the political condition we're in now, I think. Is people were rage voting. They felt screwed over. The loss of jobs has been devastating to so many American families, and they rage voted. And so that's my opinion, and we'll go into that and end up in an argument. But ultimately, it's the stories that'll help us to find each other again. And it's the stories that the songwriters, the great troubadours, sing of. You don't have to have lived it, but you have to understand it.
I've got a couple of cuts we can listen, just maybe the first minute of a couple more songs, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank
okay,
you.
Because listeners, again, Mary Gaucher is in town tonight, performing at the Love and Cup in Henrietta tonight at 8 p.m. Tickets $20 in advance at loveandcup.com, $25 at the door. And I want to listen to a clip of the song called Brothers next. So maybe we'll listen about the first 45 seconds full here, but Let's go ahead and let's listen, and then we'll have Mary tell us about it. This song is called Brothers, and it's off of that new CD. So let's listen.
War of my baby from my breast. Now my name and rank cover my chest. 23 hours I flew and wept. 23 hours I never slept. Why my face changed my soaking bra. Told my body not to feel at all. Tried to be like you. What must I do?
So this is a powerful song that if you just read the YouTube comments, let me read what Amy, and normally, by the way, I never read YouTube comments, but sometimes singer-songwriters, people have some really interesting stuff. And Amy, I just happened to notice this. She wrote, I sent this song to my sister, an Army veteran and a mother of two. She said she was able to listen to the first two lines before she had to turn it off. She said it hit so close to home. And some of the other songs she really liked. We had a great crying session together. You have done a great job with telling veterans' stories.
Oh, God bless Amy.
That's powerful. I mean, and here's an Army veteran and mother, too, said, I don't even know if I can handle this because I can already feel what this is about. Why don't you tell the listeners what this is about?
This is about the experience of the first generation of female combat soldiers. Their experience parallels a lot of what African Americans went through before the military was integrated. It's very, very difficult to be first. I had a friend, a great songwriter, Guy Clark. I traveled with him for years, and on stage every night he told the joke, a very simple joke. He always said, always remember, it's the second mouse that gets the cheese. First mouse gets the mousetrap. This was written with two women who were battle buddies, and Megan Cunahan, the co-writer, was deployed while she was nursing, because the mantra was, okay, you want to be in combat, then no special treatment. And so they made no allowances for women who were nursing babies, which is, I think, knowing what I know about attachment and the importance of those early years for that baby to attach fully to the mother, to have good relationships later in life. As a baby who was removed from her mother's arms at birth, I really had a visceral reaction to that story. She was deployed while nursing, and her breasts were heavy with breast milk, and she had to go to Iraq, and it was horrible for her. But when she got there, she did her duty. She served her country. They put her in men's boots. Her feet immediately got blood blistered up, and she was sliding in her own blood in her boots. And she was doing the best she could with what they gave her. And when she came home and was done with her tour of duty, she noticed a man on Facebook on Veterans Day raised a flag for all the men who served. And this just destroyed her. She's like, what a minute. Wait a minute. What about the women? Aren't we your brothers too? And that's the nature of the song.
It's a remarkable song. It's worth seeking out on your own. Brothers, you can find it pretty easily now. And it's marygaucher.com. You want to learn more. Though it's pronounced Gaucher, as we've been telling you, but it's spelled Gauthier. The next song I want to listen to is just a bit of The War After the War. So let's listen to that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. Opening line, who's going to care for the ones who care for the ones who went to war? Who did you write this one with?
Six wives of service members. I have to say, when When someone's been deployed 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, it takes a tremendous toll on the family. And these wives are left to take care of the kids on their own. They're left to hold things together on their own. And oftentimes their husband comes back with a variety of different wounds. Some can be seen with the eye, some cannot. And it's a legitimate question. Who takes care of the wives? And they're on their own a lot. And so we wanted to get that into song. There is a foundation that found me, interestingly, the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. And she's dedicated her life to the wives, and it's called Hidden Heroes Foundation. So we're in contact with them. We might do a show, a benefit, to channel some money to veterans' wives organizations on the ground, helping wives do the heavy work of reintegrating their husbands into the family and into the community, and taking care of the kids. This is a story that hasn't been told. I don't think many people even think of it. But I wish that we could hear from the wives a lot more, a whole lot more.
In that potential collaboration with Elizabeth Dole, is this another example where you say, look, we are humans. This transcends politics. We may occasionally vote differently or support different political causes, but that's not as important as the human experience?
Exactly. This is one of those where we could talk about our friends on the other side of the aisle and mean it. Not just a showbiz or political thing. Like, okay, we agree here, and we can do something here. Let's join forces here for social change. Let's support these people who are supporting our veterans. Let's support them. Let's put our hands together and get to work. And I think that's going to save us if we can find each other with these particular issues that we can agree on and get back to work together. It's so polarizing right now that I think you could probably find a lot of people who can't think of one issue that we can agree on. But I think we can agree on this. Let's support our veterans' wives.
Mary Gaucher is playing tonight at 8 p.m., and I want to ask you what you hope this CD, what these songs, these co-written songs with veterans and family members, what you would like to think it can accomplish.
Well, I think the highest good that it can do is to get the story told in places that the story hasn't been told yet, so people can experience empathy for these people and understand that these are 11 songs, but they represent hundreds of thousands of people, that the experiences are not unique to these 11 people. They're universal experiences. And so to move the story forward, I think, would be important. In my wildest dreams, I would hope that we would think a little longer and a little harder about sending people over to war, because I think that the effects of it are lifelong, on not just the soldier but the family. And knee-jerk wars are taking their toll on our brothers and sisters, I think it's a discussion we should have. And I can't hope for more than that.
Are you less hopeful about the country at large these days?
No. Ever since the Parkland shooting, and I see these young people rising, and I see what's happening with activism, and the fire in their eyes, and the truth in their belly, and the way they're connecting kids who can't wait for their 18th birthday to vote, and how that's connecting with people my age who've been waiting for them to do this and praying that the next generation would take the mantle, I see it happening. I have a lot of hope. I see fire in the belly, and I see leadership rising, and I see generations locking hands and working together and the coming together. I think we're going to have a rough ride for another little while here. But from my perspective on the ground, I see hands being joined. We're going to see the reaction and the result of that in November. I think we're going to move it forward in the direction I want to see it go, which is bringing America back together. The divisions are cancer. They're just cancerous. We can't be divided. We have to find each other. And I think that's happening on the ground. It is.
Mary Gaucher tonight, 8 p.m., 11 Cup. Tickets, $20 in advance, $25 at the door, 11cup.com to get them. This award-winning songwriter is bringing her music. And do you want to play us out with something? Is there anything that comes to mind? You're holding your guitar, so I'm remiss if I don't ask you.
Okay, well, I should play us out. Let's do that.
We have just over 2 minutes, so you can take us right to the end if you like. MaryGaucher.com for much more. And by the way, I want to thank you for being here. This has been a wonderful hour for us.
So. Oh, it's a privilege to be with you. And I'm not kidding when I say that's the best introduction I've ever had anywhere. you are the gold record, the gold medal, Olympic gold medalist of introductions. Fantastic. Thank you for that.
No one wants to hear that. Let's hear your music. What are you going to play to take us out?
Another wives song. They say no man's left behind, but that ain't true. And they hate it that they need us, but they do. Oh, they lose their fingers, lose their limbs. We try and love them back together again. They say no man's left behind, but that ain't true. And they're hurt in places that the eye can't see. We miss the man our husband used to be. The military breaks their heart. We're there when they fall apart. They're hurt in places that the eye can't see. And we're stronger together. Sisters forever, we are stronger together. Sisters forever. Focus on the good that's all we've got.